Welcome to the Abnormally Funny People Show with your hosts, Simon Minty and Steve Best. This podcast is sponsored by Barclays. For more information, please see our website, abnormallyfunnypeople.com. We hope you enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Abnormally Funny People Show number 16. I'm Simon Minty.
Hello, and I'm Steve Best. Today's a masterclass in podcasting.
Our guests are mighty in this world of podcasting. They are the original producers of the BBC Ouch Talk Show.
Yes, for over 10 years, they have created a monthly show and have thousands of faithful followers. Hello to you, Damon Rose.
Hello.
And to Emma Tracy.
Hello.
We will speak with Damon and Emma in a moment, but before we do that, there's an update on our sponsorship.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it. Well, you know what? We're still scratching around a bit. We've got a couple of companies or organisations who are interested. Had a really nice email, a guy, Charlie, from Independent Lives. He had an idea. He said if we go down the crowdfunding route, we should go to DPULOs and maybe they could all chip in towards it.
DPULOs? It sounds like GPU UFOs. Is
yeah, that's it. What's it called? No. This is a token on disabled Steve Best. Disabled persons, UDA-led organisations.
Did you say that again? That was a bit mumbled.
Yeah, so I can't even say that.
Disabled persons, user.
You know, it's organisations led by disabled people. Other than well-meaning non-disabled people. That's the
theory. Oh, okay. I get you. That's nice. Thanks for that, Charlie. So if you're interested in helping, contact us via Facebook or our website, abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
And as well as our two guests, we have our moment of the month, and we will check in with all things about tech and accessibility with Robin from AbilityNet.
And of course, check out how things are going in LA with Shannon Murray. So let's crack on.
Have a question or a comment? You can also text us or leave a voicemail on 07756-190-561.
So let's kick off with moment of the month. Emma, your moment of the month.
Right, well, I just had a baby 6 months ago, probably all I ever talk about, but anyway. And I also moved to a new house in a new area, and I use a guide dog. And the moment came after a lot of time staying in various different places while the house is getting ready and stuff, so not really getting out on my own very much. But the moment arrived where I needed to become independent again, but with a child in tow. So I decided about 2 weeks after moving into my new house, I thought, I'm going to take the guide dog people are coming tomorrow to teach me how to walk pulling the buggy and do a few routes. But I thought, I'll just get a bit of practice in before they arrive. So it took about 45 minutes to get out of the house, does with children. Got out of the house, absolutely delighted with myself. Walked 5 or 10 minutes down the road, managed to do the curbs. Verona, my guide dog, worked like a dream. The baby was asleep. I was like, I am a genius. This is amazing. So we turned back. I thought, I'm not gonna overdo this. I'm gonna turn back after 5 minutes. I'm gonna go home and just be very pleased with myself and have a cup of tea. So we got back to, we did the same distance back again by my calculations, and Verona was very keen to go down a side street, and our house is on a corner, so you can go the back door is a side door which you can get to from the street. So I thought, okay, well, she's probably just bringing me to that other door, so we'll do it. You know, why not? I trust her. She's great. You know, we've been together for 6 years. It's fantastic. And I think she did bring me down the right street, but I think I lost confidence a bit. So we went round and round in circles a little bit, and I got completely and utterly discombobulated. Like, try blindfolding yourself and whizzing yourself around in a circle 25 times and then you don't know where you are. So we rocked up at this house. I thought, it must be our house. So I had to let go of the buggy to do some sort of trailing along the wall of this house with my hand. So I left the buggy, put the brakes on and started trailing along, and an elderly couple came out and said, "You all right, love?" And I was like, yeah, a little bit lost. And they said, we're just visiting. Where are you looking for? And I told them my address. And I said, I'm sure it's like exceptionally close. I'm sure. And then I said, what street are we on? And they told me a street I'd never heard of in my life. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. Sorry, this is getting very long, but you can always edit it down. They had to go to their neighbour and say, oh, do you know where this place is? And the guy was like, oh, I'll just get a map. And I was like, no, what am I trying? And it did turn out that I was only 30 seconds away from my house. But I had sort of walked away from the buggy at that point, and I was like, I had to actually ask where my child was. I mean, it was only a few metres behind me, but I did feel exceptionally blind and incompetent that I had actually lost where he was. So anyway, that was my moment of the month where I was only 30 seconds from my house, but I could have been miles away for all any of us.
Nearly lost your baby and your house.
Nearly lost my baby and my house. But you know what? At the end of the day, I figured out that I was able to navigate the world with a buggy and a dog, and that was great, to a point anyway. And that was it was positive generally, but just the comedy of the elderly couple just sort of looking at me going, right, you know, this girl is really in dire straits. She's, you know, she's blind. She shouldn't even probably be out. What's she doing with a buggy and a dog and not knowing where she is, not knowing where her own house is?
Is there that? I'm trying to think of an example for me as a short person where it's that confirming annoying stereotypes that people have. So I deliberately don't want to overdo anything that short people are always kind of teased for or whatever. So a blind person getting lost is that, oh, damn it, it really annoys me when that happens. Or yeah. Is it part of the deal anyway?
It's more specifically getting lost very, very close to where you need to be. So, you know, you could be lost 2 metres from what you need to find, but you are lost. You don't know where it is. You've lost perspective. You know, it's the GPS isn't accurate enough.
Well, I was going to say, there's Google Maps.
Because it's accurate enough for you because you can kind of, you can do a panoramic sort of view around and say, no, yeah, that's fine. I can sort of see it over the hill, but not.
It hasn't got a voice on it saying.
Yes, it does. It's turn by turn directions, but it's just not accurate enough. Okay. I could be 10 metres from the door. So it's, I think GPS is 10 metres.
Yes, I see what you mean.
So I can be 10 metres from the door, but I'm not at the door and the door could be anywhere. For all I know.
I learned a new word there, trailing. Is that trailing as in this is you touching the sense?
It's quite funny, actually. It's a very official mobility term that mobility teachers use. They're the people who teach you how to get out and about either with a cane or a dog.
Okay.
And it's actually a term I learned when I was a very little, very, very, you know, 6 or 7 years old, where the first aspect of learning how to navigate independently is trailing your hand along walls. So you keep your fingers really safe. You turn your thumb in and you put your hand against the wall. This was Pebble Dash, so not so good.
Ouch, yeah.
But so I wasn't really doing proper trailing. But
you
that's
could file your nails at
but
the same
that's
time.
How I, yeah that's how I learned. That's what I, you know. You go back to the really old stuff when the chips are down.
There's a whole language, isn't there, around mobility for blind people that they just don't indenting,
outdenting,
inner shoreline, mushroom tip.
Pear tip.
This all sounds
marshmallow tip.
Druggy talk to
you're
me.
Keeping us in the dark. Can you? You want to? Oh, marshmallow. These sound like the end of cane.
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So what was the indenting, outdenting? What's that?
When
one?
You get to a corner, and you're going to cross the road, you don't cross at the corner because it's harder to hear whether there are cars coming out or so. You indent quite a way. So with indenting, you move in to the street and then cross over, and then you outdent again to get back onto
to make absolutely sure you don't. Waft into the road that you shouldn't be in, you know.
I mean, no one does it once they know the route, and you know, you don't really do it very much. But
it's
dogs,
the terminology that
it's
that
the terminology, So trailing, it's really interesting you picked up on that because it is a very official mobility term.
But and as you say, it's for new, unfamiliar areas. You don't trail everywhere else because you don't need to. Yeah,
I might trail along a wall if I know fairly well where a door is and I'm using my cane. I may trail along a wall to get the door, to find the door in an unfamiliar building. Or I might trail my hand along to find a lift button, say.
Yeah, got you.
That kind of thing. So I'll start at a point, at a rough point, and then trail around to sort of to find what I need. I didn't even know I do it. Like that word just came from the bottom of my brain.
I'm making your story longer. There is a comedian, and I can't remember who he is, talks about the Virgin train toilets, and they always say that braille info is the other side of the loo, right down low. So I suspect, and there's no way anyone would trail around the whole of a public loo to try and find.
Do you know it's interesting again. I know what you mean, and I'm not sure about the Virgin train disabled loos, but I do find them really big and scary, there's too many buttons, and I don't know what they do. And braille, you read it so slowly, it takes you blooming ages to read it. And
if you're bursting for the loo, it's all problematic.
But the other thing I always say is that actually accessible loos, they're a necessary evil for me if I have the dog. She can't fit into a cubicle and stuff. But they're really bad for blind people because they're really big. And you have to feel all the dirty places to find the sink and find the hand dryer. You have to wash. I end up washing my hands about 3 times. And then I have to find the dog and then find the door. You're in there ages. Honestly, they're really bad for blind people, but obviously good for the people that actually really, really need them. So that's okay.
Thank you very much, Emma. Good luck with your trailing.
Sorry about a bit lengthy there.
Not at all. Damon, a moment of the month from you.
My moment of the month. Can I break the format and refer back to last month to begin with?
I'm just very chuffed that you think we have a format.
Is that all right? No, it feels like a format to me. This is what we would call a format, isn't it, Emma?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yes.
You crazy radical, yeah. Messing us up. Go on.
So BBC.
This is the revenge.
So, I guess I've always been... So this is a parent story as well. I'm a dad. I've got a 7-year-old boy, a 3-year-old girl. And last month... for the first time, my little boy said something I've been expecting for quite a long time, and it was this. Daddy, I really wish that you weren't blind. And I thought, oh, dear, this is a bit heartbreaking. How do I deal with this? And I said, well, why is that? Why is that, Charlie? He said, well, because then we'd be able to have a proper dog and not just the guide dog. So that was last month's thing. And then this month...
Oh, just how did you follow that up? Or did you just chuckle?
I think I chuckled.
Okay. Yeah,
I think I chuckled.
And your dog got a little bit ratty.
My dog, oh, I don't. He's being looked after by your producers in the other
But could you have another... You could have another dog, though, couldn't you?
Yeah, but don't tell Charlie.
Oh, okay. Is he going to listen to this? But you could have a couple of dogs.
A recreational and a working dog.
I could, but then you'd find it hard to take the other dog for a walk because you're not allowed to take... If you're a guide dog owner, you're not allowed to take a second dog out with you. It's one of the rules.
Because that's what your 7-year-old son is.
What's the other guide dog rules?
That rule to me. Why is that...
Because you're supposed to concentrate on guiding. There's other rules, aren't there? You're not allowed to use a dog when you're drunk. They seem to be enforcing that.
Oh, really?
There seems to be... There's a lot of talk about it. There was something in the news about it a few months ago.
But that's one of the bonuses, isn't it? Isn't with me my mobility scooter. That means if I am drunk, I know I'm not going to fall over because I sit on the scooter. And you know that your dog will guide you home unless you're...
But you're not allowed to ride a bicycle when you're drunk. So you can get done for riding a mobility scooter.
I just incriminated myself.
I think so.
But I'm on foot. You know, it's not like you're in charge of a vehicle. I suppose you are in charge of a dog. But like, how are you supposed to get home?
Yeah.
There were so many times when I was a student, when I got home, woke up in the morning and thought, how did I get home? You know, it was the dog. It was absolutely the dog who got me there.
And then you try and tell people that the dog does not bring you home. It's a team and you know your own way home. And then they do.
What if you get the dog drunk?
No, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, that must be a rule.
Sorry you have another moment of the month, I reckon.
I've got my part two in a second.
Okay, one, just the guy at the tube station today told me that he saw with his own eyes yesterday a guide dog take the Oyster card from the blind man and put it on the reader.
Just a rip.
And I said, no, you didn't.
Was he not ever taught trailing?
Probably is kind of annoying looking for the thing that you put it on.
Okay.
But he must have done it for his own. He must have trained the dog to do it for his own amusement. Because the dogs are very trainable. You know, you can train them to do new stuff that the instructor didn't train them to do.
I saw a dog take the blind person's mobile phone and then put it on the payment thing with the Apple Pay.
So no, you didn't.
And they used a little four print instead of a fingerprint.
I can believe that. Yeah.
Damon, you have a second one.
Well, the second part of the story is the other thing that I have been worrying about happening as a blind parent is, you know, when is that moment going to be when he's a little bit too embarrassed that he's got a daddy who's blind? And last Saturday it happened. I was at the gym. And Charlie came bowling over to me after his football lesson and he said, Daddy, 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 Max is here. Can we go and play over by the computers and in the play area, please? And I said, oh, yeah, I can meet Max's dad, can I? I said, actually, let's go home.
No. But hang on.
But do you think that was that?
Exactly.
It was totally that. And I asked him later. And he said it's because people don't know, Daddy. People don't know that you're blind. And I think he partly means that people don't know what it means. People think very little of you, and I don't have a way of dealing with
it. He's 7?
Yeah, he's 7 years old.
Yeah, so I don't know if he thought into it that deeply, did he?
That was my interpretation. Maybe I think you might be
what do they call it? Projecting a little bit.
Yeah, I am.
I do, but presumably you're going to have to say, look, we need to come up with a plan, Charlie, because I can't not ever meet any of your friends' parents.
Well, I guess we'll have to talk to him about how, you know, just to reinforce. I mean, I think he thinks I'm pretty cool, as he puts it. And I feel sort of like funny about using the word cool because apparently it's not cool anymore.
Should be saying sick or something?
Sick, like sick, or I'm a hipster or something.
You have a beard for that, don't you? Is that?
That's not. Yeah, but also I have no children, so how do I know this? But I think if my child said that, I'd say, well, listen, don't worry, but I've met lots of people, so I know how to meet people who haven't met someone like me before. So
I should take notes.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know how to deal with it. I don't. It feels so much more when you're a parent. It's like, oh, how can I be sensitive? How can I deal with it the way he thinks about it as well? I don't want to push him into something. I don't want to upset the apple cart.
Yeah.
All of these things.
But if you're meeting a dad in a leisure centre, it's not like here, we're talking everything. Like, they're not going to start asking you 27 questions about your moment of the month, are they? They're going to... You just do general chit chat, or do you? I don't know. I think you should go.
But
for it.
You know, kids' minds think in different ways, right? Isn't that? That's all. I think you, yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks, Damon. Thanks for that. And Simon, Mr. Minty, what about your moment of the month?
Two.
Oh, always have two moments, I should have said.
Sorry about that. Yeah. First one is increasing pain in my hips. Start using a little stick. But I've also now got some heavy duty painkillers. And I don't know if Damon or Emma need painkillers in any shape or form. But I've just got.
You're dealing now, are you?
No, I'm not leaving.
It sounded like you were...
Not today. Yeah. Not today, Simon. Thanks.
Yeah,
anyway.
So it wasn't an offer.
Oh, it sounded like it. It sounded like you're going that way down.
It's trying to get a bit of empathy. So cocodamol, 30 milligrams, I can take up to 8 a day. And then tramadol, which are the big headliners.
Yeah.
The first time I took a tramadol, I took it at home because I was a bit nervous about it. It was like someone had injected half a bottle of wine inside me really quickly and then made me just float on the clouds. I was kind of skipping around my flat, bearing in mind I can't even move normally.
You sure you're not dealing? It really sounds like
no,
a pitch here.
I'm not getting rid of these things.
Okay.
It just... You know what it was? I don't know if you ever read those press reports and they go, oh, well, this famous person's become addicted to prescription drugs.
Yeah.
And I always feel, oh, that's nonsense. How can they do that? Then this sort of heavy-duty painkiller, I can absolutely see it. It's kind of... They're so great, it's a little bit frightening.
That sounds good. I should try some of that.
It's funny you say that about tramadol because I was given some by my doctor a couple of years ago and I took it home and I decided to bear the back pain instead because I was a bit too frightened to take it.
I've had them 6 weeks. I got them just before Edinburgh because I thought I've got to get something while I'm up. I didn't take any. And then so I had them 6 weeks. And then when I was at home and safe and not doing something, I thought, OK, I'll try one now.
But do you say once you've had one, are they as effective each time you take more? Do they lower the threshold?
No, I've been chasing that high ever since, you know. Never been the same.
Well, remember I had a really...
You're just scratching around for it, no.
Bad back pain. You gave me one from the States years ago and I couldn't get out of bed for 3 days. And you gave me this... I'm really against taking painkillers generally.
You are.
And you gave me one of these. It's a red... I can't remember what it is. And it just... I got out of my bed... After about half an hour, and that was it.
I don't know if today should be the day that I tell you that it was just a little placebo. those weren't even heavy duty. I've gone on to the big league. My second bit is, and I got myself confused, there is a new television show called Kitchen Impossible, which is Michelle Rue Jr.
Okay.
And he is obviously a chef, a very famous, well-known chef. And he's got a bunch of people that come in and he's teaching them, I think. I haven't seen this, by the way, so it's always one of those...
I have.
Oh, thanks, everybody. We'll come to you. So has he got a group of differently disabled people that he's teaching? Is that right?
Yes.
Mm.
Okay. So I saw a little Twitter storm conversation, whichever way you want to look at it. Sherry Lee Houston from Coronation Street. Lisa Hammond's been on here from EastEnders. And they were saying, what is this? We must stop these... sort of voyeuristic, watching the disableds trying to... That was a deliberate mistake there. Doing...
What side was it on? What channel?
Channel 4, isn't it?
Yeah, they're a bit gone then. Yeah.
So, I spoke to some disability, I don't know, rights people I know, some activists, and they're like, I love that programme. I think it's really great. And it just threw up that whole dilemma again of, should it be blended into... disability and disabled characters blended into the main show? Or do you have specific ones? I mean, Damon and Emma, you've seen this. What did you think of it?
Do you know, did you remember the programme Different Strokes?
I do.
What are you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, we're talking about Willis.
Yeah.
My mum always used to have a phrase when, because she used to hate me watching it. She used to say, I hate this programme so much because it's like they're black, but we love them.
So it's a bit preachy. And
I've come to think that some of Channel 4's shows are a little bit like that around disability.
It's really interesting, yeah.
Yes, so, but that was always, there was a philosophy that was, we don't do quality control, we just get any disabled person on anything. Let's not try and pick the right or the wrong, you just do anything. So do you feel it's a bit preachy then? It is a bit kind of, oh, bless them, aren't they?
Is it preachy or is it voyeuristic? That's the
better word.
I've got to say, I didn't like the beginning of the show. I don't know what Emma thinks on this, but at the beginning of it felt like, you know how they do on television? They will get together all the big clips right near the big top of the hour.
This is what you're going to see.
And they will show the rowdiness, the most extreme end of disability and tics and autism and all this kind of thing at the top of the show. But I found myself quite glued for the rest of the hour after they got over themselves with the clips at the beginning. I don't know what Emma thinks.
I don't know what to say really because
you work for the BBC and have to not have an opinion.
It's really tricky because I really don't like it.
Okay.
I didn't watch the second one. It was on. I watched whatever was on before it, and possibly what was on after it, and I didn't watch it. I actually specifically left the room. I found, and I've watched an enormous amount of disability-related television in my time. I found it difficult to cope with the fact that most of them were really awful at what they were doing, and I found it difficult to cope with the fact that it would be very, very difficult for some of the people with some of their impairments to work in a kitchen, like extraordinarily difficult. And it just didn't sit right with me at all.
So can you go back to that? The premise is to put disabled people into a working kitchen.
Yes, a working kitchen, and put them into restaurants serving and that kind of, and you know, so I didn't watch the second one. I haven't seen it since, but I found it a difficult watch, a very difficult watch. But I love the name, though.
In some ways, it's not that out there because disabled people have often been linked with the three Fs, haven't they? Flowers, food and filth in terms of jobs and employment in the past. And so this was food, and we're quite used to seeing disabled people trained up in the food business. Simon, you know loads about this.
Yeah, but I think the two of your answers, you haven't seen this, Stevie,
no.
Have you? The person I spoke to, Damon, who said I was glued to it. Absolutely. I mean, already feeling a bit uncomfortable in certain ways, but was glued to it.
Yeah.
But Emma, if you follow the Lisa and the Cheryl Lee, was like, no, we shouldn't be doing this sort of stuff. And it kind of, I've got to watch it maybe because it's nothing more annoying than someone talking about a show they've not seen, but it was the principle.
But I'd go back to Channel 4's and I shouldn't be saying this. You know, I work for the BBC. This is bad, but, you know, Channel 4's philosophy on television programmes, you know, there does seem to be this we're disabled but we love them kind of thing. Whereas I would much rather see Channel 4 being really bold and including disabled people in everyday telly.
And that was the argument.
Yeah.
That was the point. I always come to these. It shouldn't just have to be an either or. If you think there's enough going on both sides, you do keep it a bit happy.
I haven't seen it either. That's a slight bomb. But it does sound to me, as how you're describing it, it's totally voyeuristic. It's not about... Is it about trying to overcome or how to work in a kitchen if you're disabled? Or...
It's about, actually, it's a good premise. It's about how to become employable. It's about disabled people are employable. They just need to be given opportunities.
Okay.
All we would wholeheartedly say that many, many disabled people who are unemployed could have a job and keep a job and be employed only for this, and a big part of that is often opportunity. So Michelle Roux Jr. is giving them some opportunity to work in a really tough environment and to do things that really, really challenges them. So I can totally see the premise, and
Do you think the what Dame was saying, one, the kind of the idea behind Channel 4 making these programmes is not that idea? I mean, it's a good premise that way, but do you think they're deliberately trying to make it confrontational, trying to make it that people are going to have hardships and so they're going to be laughing at the same
thing? I think they just make it the same way as everybody makes all other TV shows.
Exactly. Yeah, yes.
I don't think there's anything. Okay. I'm not going to diss Channel 4's disability remit. I'm just saying, because, every other, you watch some things about benefits and streets of people on benefits on Channel 5 and people with millions of kids, and it's all the same.
Talent shows is all about the backstory and so on.
Yeah, but... so it's not... I wouldn't say that that's the issue. I would say that it was a brilliant premise, but I found it... And I haven't fully deconstructed and organised in my head and figured out why I found it such a difficult watch, but...
To be fair, they're making accessible telly, aren't they, for the masses, and they are... They are bringing disability to that audience.
Which is a
audience.
Good thing. Yeah. It's a good thing in general.
I think the debate will continue.
Yeah, we could talk about this for, ever.
Okay. Our show's not that long, Emma. We can't do it forever. We'll get you back, though. See Best, our token non-disabled. You come up with something?
Well, it's kind of going back to the good old starting days, really. As I went to the Comedy Store to take some photos of all things, and they had Chris McCausland there. That's
like
what
Chris McCausland?
Yes. And he was one of our original members.
The original lineup.
The lineup at the Edinburgh Festival 2005. And it was just nice to see him again. I hadn't seen him for a long, long time. And we talked about Abnormally Funny People and things like that. And he did his set. Yeah. He was actually last but one, penultimate act. So he's, it was a charity gig. And he was the only disabled person on the charity gig. It was a children's charity. And it was just good to see his set again, actually. And it was.
Presume it's a different set.
It was completely different, unlike some of mine. So. it was great to see him, and what I did notice, and it was something that he kind of did the first time, was this time he didn't do it at all, mention it being blind, his disability at all.
He used to just do a one-liner to kind of...
Break the ice.
Get it. Well, not break the ice, I just thought he was getting over and done with, and then he moves on to what he wanted to do.
I just watched his set, and I can't remember him doing anything, even at the beginning. Although he was led on this, I don't know how he was... Did it at the show we did? Was he brought on?
Oh, it was great fun at Edinburgh. Yeah. Obviously, we did it every day, but gradually the plan was, because we were all in a straight line, weren't we? So he was the last on, and we mocked it up so he would bump into me and we would do a joke Laurel and Hardy fall about. But really, that was not him accidentally, but he was just finding his position would hit me.
Yeah.
And then we found our position. So, yeah. But no, he didn't get led on, only the first couple of shows.
So, coming up next, everybody, we will speak to Damon and Emma about their work.
If you'd like to get in touch, you can email us on podcast@abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
So, back in February, this was show 9, we had the original hosts of the BBC Out show. That was Matt Fraser and Liz Carr, and they came in and talked about their time presenting the show. But we missed the trick. We didn't get the creative team, the producers behind BBC Out. And now we do. You've heard them with their moments of the month. Now we're going to have a proper conversation with them. Now, I was trying to remember the first time I heard about Ouch, the website then, and the podcast was around 2004, something like that, maybe 2005. And we were just starting Abnormally Funny People. Podcasts were very new, very exciting. You two created something very unique. I mean, how did it come about in the first place?
The podcast? The website had been around since about 2002. And then in 2006... we had to get around an awful lot of BBC red tape in order to do a podcast in the first instance. It's not technically allowed in terms of the BBC charter to do your own podcast at the BBC. It's fine to do to rebroadcast programmes that have already been broadcast and put them out as podcasts, but this is red tape, boring legal spiegel, detail that you probably don't want to hear about. This is how we started.
Other sections of the BBC actually had a podcast. You were the first people to try that.
We were the first only made for web podcasts.
Okay.
We probably still are.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think until maybe there'll be a change in the charter renewal. Who knows? But. I think it would be quite...
But presumably you want to get the other way around, that you would have said, OK, well, let's broadcast it on radio and then we'd put the podcast out. But they said, no, just stay at podcast for the moment. But still, nevertheless, this was still new, the concept, the idea, what you did. How did that all...
And we did a six-month trial. I guess I wanted to do a show. I had done a podcast in about the year 2000 for a few years called Blind Kiss.
Year 2000?
Yeah.
So someone I was trying to discuss, when was the first kind of podcast out? Was that around that time?
No, it's probably about 2005.
No, so 2005? Damon's podcast that he did in 2000 was not what you'd call
podcast.
Now a podcast, but
was
in fact a downloadable hour of audio that even on very quick university networks at that time took... as I remember, 5 or 6 hours to download.
I met Matt and Liz in a cafe on the South Bank, if I remember rightly, and I sat and I talked to them about the idea, and it was amazing because I had Matt on one side, Liz on the other side, and it was like I could hear this podcast unfolding in front of me. You know, this crazy sort of disability banter, you know, this Crip stuff, as we call it. And it's...
As Liz generally call. Oh, no, they're both Matt and Liz, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're Crip users.
Crip.
Yeah.
They are Crips.
Is that where you were there as well, Emma, at the start then, or you...
No. Do you want to finish your story, or will I chip in?
No, go for it.
I was a Blind Kiss fan, a huge Blind Kiss fan. I'm born blind, so I'd always been blind, but... And I'd always talked about being blind in a certain way, and in a way that said I didn't mind being blind too much, which always caught everybody on the hop. And it was, you know, I always made jokes about it and it was always quite funny. But I thought I was the only person doing that because most of the other blind people I knew were quite serious. And then I found Blind Kiss and I fell in love with it, and it absolutely spoke to me. It helped me kind of appreciate that I was disabled as well as, you know, being blind meant being disabled, which is something I hadn't really thought about either. So I was a big fan of that. And then I moved on from that to Ouch when Blind Kiss finished and Ouch started. And I was a big, big fan of Ouch because, you know, Damon says that the podcast was Blind Kiss transferring to Pan Disability, but Ouch was the start of that, the actual website from 2002. It was like humour you've never, ever, ever seen before. Humour that, you know, was, as we know, very self-deprecating, very kind of celebratory in a lot of ways, and sometimes dark. And
so how did you, were you working at the BBC
so,
then?
No, I wasn't. I was only a young'un still. And I actually started running after university. I ran a magazine for blind people, much more straight-laced, but with like blindy blunders, which was like people would send in their kind of things like my story about going to the wrong house, you know, stuff like that. So I had a little thing like that. But I was looking for a job in the media, and I basically knocked on Damon's door, and then a job came up, and I was just, you know, I was already completely entrenched in what they were doing, and a really big fan. And I had done media in university, and I'd been doing audio as a little job. So yeah, that's how I.
So what year was that? It started in 2005.
I started, in Ouch 10 years ago at the end of October there. So oh,
okay,
2005.
That's the beginning.
For the listener, let's play a couple of clips maybe, so they can hear. We asked you to kind of your favourite moments. Now I'm presuming that was quite a hard thing to do, but we've got kind of a couple of illustrative
kind
clips.
Kind of impossible. Yeah.
Emma, do you want to introduce your one? What's going on?
This is an example of our famous / infamous parlour game, based on the parlour game Animal, Vegetable or Mineral. It's called Vegetable, Vegetable or Vegetable, where we got a disabled person on the line and tried to guess what was, quote, wrong, quote, with them. So it was always a different disabled person with a different disability. And sometimes we got people in to help guess. And one of those times was the great Dr. Sarah Jarvis, who I'm sure you've seen on lots of and heard on Jeremy Vine and lots of different things. She's a great speaker. And we got her on to guess what was wrong with the person on the line. The Ouch
Podcast. We have with us,
yes,
resident doctor on Jeremy Vine's radio two show, Sarah Jarvis.
Ooh! Hello, Sarah.
I'm feeling awfully nervous.
Oh, no, don't be nervous.
Yeah. Are you?
She's on the other foot now, eh?
It's fine.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes.
Because I find doctors on some, you know, there's two sorts of doctors for me. And I think we can pretty much succinctify it down to this. What do you like? Are you, if somebody asks for Prozac, do you give it to them? Or do you just slap them around the face and tell them you've got a life?
Contestant, we've got somebody called Alan on the line. Hello, Alan.
Hi.
Hello.
Remember, only answer yes or no, and the time starts now.
Alan, have you got arms?
Yes.
Do you get angry at normal people?
Yes.
Do you have a neuro condition? Neurological?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Sarah, any ideas yet?
Neurological.
Has this got worse as you got older?
Yes.
Ooh. Got 10 seconds.
Alan!
Yes?
Are you suffering from EastEnditis?
No.
Okay.
Are you a Curvy King?
Sorry? Was it to do with drugs that your mother took when you were when she was pregnant with you?
No.
Thanks for the reference, Sarah. Like it.
Come on, put us out of our misery, Alan. What's wrong with you?
Choco-Marie-Tooth.
She's heard of it.
I can spell it.
That old chestnut.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, Alan, it's an absolute pleasure because I have never in my life met anyone with Choco-Marie-Tooth, so it's a complete pleasure.
What is it, Doctor? Tell us about it.
It's very rare.
She's getting the book out.
So while she's reading what the symptoms are...
Why don't you tell us what it's really like?
I've never actually
had it seen a case.
Alan, when people find out you've got the shark thing, what questions do they ask you?
Shark finitis.
They always think I've got something wrong with my teeth.
That was a great clip, and I haven't heard that before. And it's funny watching Emma and Damon in the studio because they're laughing their heads off, and they've heard it a few times.
Lots of times.
And I remember when Matt and Liz were on the show, and they were telling me about the vegetable, and I just thought that was just amazing, especially for the BBC to do that so many years ago, and to do that now might be, I don't know, would you get away with that now?
You got found out, didn't you? It's not there now. They finally catch up with you.
It's just a great concept. I really love it. But
It would probably be more difficult to do nowadays. You know, at the time, we were slightly under the radar. We were a website in a part of the BBC that not as many people looked at, maybe.
Do you think the fact that you were not broadcast, did that help a bit as well? Because they're saying, well, hang on, we haven't got to check this for that broadcast, but this is a completely separate... Is that coincidence?
Well, yes, I think not being broadcast probably did kind of facilitate some stuff, but it would have been still nice to be broadcast.
But how long did that section of the programme run on for? Was that the whole time BBC Ouch was on the other health? Because it's changed from BBC Health to... News.
It was BBC Learning for a long time. And we did veg after we went to News too, didn't we, for a bit?
We did.
Yeah, we did a few.
For a little while.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
We did like 100 of them. I don't know, like many, 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 many of them.
I remember when Liz and Matt came on and I remember saying how annoying, because I did it a couple of times, hosting. And I took it seriously. I wanted to get the answers. And those two, you can tell, it is just inappropriate silliness.
Yeah.
And
do you have a head?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. I remember Liz saying, do you have a head? Yeah.
So if we continue with this, and maybe there's a warning, it's slightly inappropriate humour, although I must confess it did make me giggle. Damon, we got another clip. How would you describe this one?
Okay, so this is a moment where we had a guest in the studio. Sorry, this is a moment where we had a guest down the line from Sweden, a comedian, disabled comedian with cerebral palsy, called Jesper Odelberg. And we knew from speaking to him beforehand that his Swedish accent kind of got in the way a little bit. You know, quite apart from the fact that he has, you know, that sort of cerebral palsy voice as well, which a lot of people find difficult to understand. He also had a Swedish accent.
Nice.
And so we thought it would be really funny if we got an interpreter in, but not an interpreter of Swedish, an interpreter with cerebral palsy. And this is what it sounded like.
Yeah, when I did some tattoos, I scared them, you know.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm really polite. I'm having a slight problem understanding our friend Jesper. Is there somebody that can speak? You know?
We did think this might happen.
Can we get a translator or something?
Is that all right, Damon? Yeah, can we actually get a translator
in? No offence, mate, but it's the combination. Can we get somebody that speaks...
Well, somebody that speaks your language. That would be useful.
Have we got anyone?
Hello.
Lawrence, meet Jesper.
Hi, Jesper.
Hey, Lawrence.
Okay. Jesper, so you know, Lawrence is one of your lot. He's a comedian.
Yeah, he's English.
He understands everything that you say because he's also got funny bones.
Yeah, he's a sepia as well.
Okay.
Sepia.
We had... Your clip, Love in the Handicapped Toilet. Have you had love?
Have you ever made love in a handicapped toilet?
Beep!
I think, Lawrence, have you...
What was that, Lawrence? Can you translate it for us?
It
was sort of like...
They do, it's like a natural thing. They completely understand each other.
They do, it's like they're twins, aren't they?
when I listened to that, when you sent it over, I started laughing. I suppose it does go beyond the line. There's that, also that bit of when you spend so much time with disabled people and comedians, the threshold level of what is acceptable and what isn't just flies along, and it goes. And one of the reasons when we set up Abnormally Funny People having Steve Best as our token non-disabled was I said occasionally I don't want it to turn into this disability group where we forget all perspective of shocking what the my outside world might think. However, we were all giggling throughout that. I mean, that's a beautiful...
No, but can I be honest, though? Okay. When I did first hear that, I remember saying, I've got to speak to Simon. Is this okay? So as a token non-disabled...
Has it gone too far?
It kind of felt to me that the guys were kind of... But now hearing it a second time, I found it funny. And because the first time I thought, are they laughing at the cerebral palsy or the fact that they're mucking around with the accent? So there's a lot going on in there, but the second time listening, it's much funnier, as in just purely mucking around.
I think Steve and I can talk about this for 10 minutes, because it is the complexity of disability and comedy. I mean, Damon, how did that go down when that went out?
Well, as you say, it's really complex, because you listen and you can hear the fact that, it's almost too hard to decode this piece, because, you know, you've got a Swedish man and an English man, but they sort of both sound a bit similar because they got cerebral palsy, and somehow that's a little bit funny. And Matt and Liz, I think they're laughing ahead of time. They're not mocking Jesper. I don't think they would want to. They knew what was coming up. You know, they knew Lawrence was about to chime in the way that he did do. But it is challenging. You know, I mean, we couldn't just, I think, stay firmly over one side of the line when we were doing some comedic stuff. We were there what Matt and Liz brought their genius to the show. We created the arena of fun, as it were. You know, we threw everything into the studio. We booked the guests and we threw some of the ideas in, and it all came together, hopefully, in front of the microphone.
You can hear the energy of Matt and Liz on that.
Yes. Mm.
You know,
yes.
They're having the time of their lives and being brilliant on top.
I think it's a very good word, that energy. That's the bit that lifts out. And you're itching to hear what comes next. I mean,
did you get any complaints?
We did get complaints. In fact, I think it's possibly the only thing we ever did that really got some actually quite vicious response, didn't we?
Yeah.
Quite upset responses from some people.
But here's a very interesting bit. And don't get me wrong, Steve, because you're quite right to say, look, I think that might be over the line, and especially that first initial listen. But is that classic of the non-disabled person getting upset on your... Were there people with cerebral palsy writing in going, oh, there were?
Yeah, there were.
Oh, jeepers, okay.
So maybe it was too far.
So, you know, it's entirely possible. It was too far for some people. I mean, everybody has their own line, don't they?
Right, absolutely. And
you know, it's possible for some people it was too much. They didn't get it. They're not, as you say, down with the disability mood and all that. And this viciousness that disabled people can have when they rip into each other when they're in private sometimes, which we all know. And I think... Love. Love? Do we love it? Yeah, we do, don't we?
We adore it.
We adore it. But, you know, we were trying to experiment a little bit. But luckily, I don't think our editors were listening to that episode when we put it out.
You know what, and that's probably my bit, because if you did a joke about short people and then we've got a clown here to come and da-da-da, I would have probably written in at that point. So you're right, each of us have that line of what it is.
But we had two people with cerebral palsy sort of willingly taking part in... Well, Jesper didn't know anything about it.
Did
admittedly,
he not?
No, Jesper didn't know we were... No, that would have ruined the gag if we'd have told him, wouldn't it? But Lawrence was certainly in with it, and we told him what
it's perfect. We've got a lovely surprise for you two. We've got... No, we haven't really. Oh. That would have been... You gave me a face there, Emma. That was just for a moment.
Yes,
right. But you're saying you couldn't... why you couldn't get away... Or you wouldn't be able to do that now? Is that because you've moved from the BBC Health to BBC News? Is there a different remit? Are there more people listening? Why could you do that now?
We're in BBC Learning, not BBC Health. I don't think we've ever been able to do it in BBC Health. It's a different time. It's a different era. That was 2007, was it? Somewhere around there.
It was early.
And it was one of the early podcasts. And very crucially, it was before the Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross incident on Radio 2.
Oh, yeah. They made a massive difference to all that.
Mm. That's amazing, I'm afraid so. For us, what it meant was that everything... everything audio and visual that went out of the BBC was then closely scrutinised. I remember when I used to produce the In Touch programme years ago in the late 90s, when I finished producing the show at about 7 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, I would pick it up, pick the tape up, walk along to presentation, and they would just put it out at 8:40.
Wow.
Nowadays, it goes through, you know, compliance. One exec has to listen to it and one other. And you can understand now why Ouch started to change, I think, at that moment.
Mm. So it wasn't necessarily the move. It was more that the approach
the mood,
of the BBC the
mood
changed.
It's
a combination. This,
and it wasn't before News. Incidentally, Ouch started to change several years before we moved over to BBC News. And it was because of this.
I think the thing that BBC News did was gave Ouch a much bigger potential audience. And what happened was a lot more people who weren't down with the disability mood, as we've been saying, were listening. And also, it caters for a wider audience now. And, we've had some amazing guests since we moved to News. It's a totally different show. It's a different show, but it changed gradually over time and for numerous different reasons.
Yeah, and I think that is a natural thing. Things naturally evolve anyway. They should have to naturally evolve. And I suppose it leaves gaps for us to be a little bit more. We're never quite as irrelevant.
This is where you jump in, isn't it?
All of these great people, brilliant, funny, clever, disabled people make their own podcasts. I would love
Emma's one of my favourite guests.
Yeah.
We've
got to find these.
Well,
people.
I didn't mean just you. Oh.
there is a gap to be filled now. A massive
absolutely.
Gap.
Yes. We're not. There's absolutely no way we would say that that's not the case. I would love to listen to heaps and heaps of different types of disability podcasts and really funny ones.
How we found our sponsor then?
I have no money. But, there's a huge gap. There is a massive gap, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be whatever, if it's not podcasts, it would be just lovely to read and listen to and look at loads and loads of great disability talent all the time doing different things. We can't do everything. We wouldn't want to. And
So when you're not ouching, Damon, you alluded to other bits. I mean, I just see you as, or both of you I see as ouch people, and I don't know about your background and history and stuff. You've been producing for a while, you've been doing other things, is that right?
Since Ouch? Before I started Ouch, I was in television. I worked for the BBC's Disability Programmes Unit.
Yes, I remember that.
And you might be one of the only people who remembers the fuss that was caused. I was found myself catapulted onto the front page of the Sun newspaper when I.
Is it a kiss and tell?
No, blind BBC hires blind TV director was the headline.
Oh, brilliant.
And it caused, a great deal of fuss, and they ran a phone poll as to whether I should keep my job or not, and nice things like that. So this was, this was where I came off from, and before that before I started at the BBC, I was quite a part of that disability arts movement. That's where I met Matt Fraser. He came to my first ever poetry gig, actually, because I was a performance poet.
Oh,
I'm going to speak to you both on this, because I always think that the producer is the person who did want to do it, but they thought, maybe I'm not going to be front, I'll do all the stuff behind. Is that a complete myth as well, or do you secretly want to be up there or in front of the mic or performing or whatever?
I think I would do either, but I probably now know so much about what's going on under the hood that it might be a little bit more tricky, but I would do either. I love producing and I love the creativity of that. And
okay.
I'd find it difficult to just come in, but I would do both.
Yes, as when we were preparing for this podcast, it was a joy. Emma was producing this one just because you can't help it.
That's I'm on maternity leave. I'm not doing it at the moment.
It also pays much better and it's far more stable.
Very more stable.
Than being a presenter.
Yes.
Steady pay, being a poet. But not more pay, presumably, if you're a major
producer.
Presenter.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, so presenters get one-off payments for the show or whatever, whereas the producer's been working for a week.
But none of us do it for that reason. We know that. So, Emma, you said earlier on you've done your bits and bobs and then approached Ouch. So how did you... But it's really hard to get to work for the BBC. How did you have the link in with Damon? Or
well, I did an interview. I filled an application form, did an interview.
Oh, I'm so
got
sorry.
The job.
Do you tick the box for disability?
It does work, folks.
Yeah. I did tick the box for disability. It was a disability website.
Okay.
And I was, yeah, so I went through the channels. All I meant, I suppose, by approaching out is that I rang or emailed Damon quite a long time before when I was running my little magazine for blind people and asked him for an interview and did a 22-year-old media enthusiast thing and said, "Where any jobs? Any jobs? Is there a job?" You know, so yeah. I did do that, but I went through all the regular channels then when a job did come up like 6 months later or something like that.
So say we're a year, 2 years down the line and Emma's back from maternity leave, Damon, you're there. What's going to happen with Ouch in the future? What's the plans? What's the thoughts?
Well, Ouch is in BBC News and we're doing a few different roles, really. The podcast, I think, is aimed a little bit more just at disabled people and that kind of stakeholder group. Stakeholder group, do you like that? BBC speak, management speak.
I'm not sure you like it the way you said it.
And that was my words, not from the BBC. And the website tends to be a little bit more aimed at the more mainstream
everybody
really.
People who use the yeah. app, who click on to BBC every day and see our articles on the homepage.
But we try to bring different stories that aren't perhaps your usual kind of sport or tragic or inspirational
story. Comes on
we
the,
bring
it,
stuff in the middle. You
it
know?
Comes on the main BBC website, but you've got the BBC Ouch bit on that, or you've got BBC...
It's BBC News, and actually BBC Ouch is now just the podcast. Okay. There's now a thing called the Disability Index, BBC Disability
Nobody
News.
Wants to know any of
this. No one wants to know. And that's where all of the articles that we used to do goes now.
I know that because I know when we were in Edinburgh and I said to you guys, we were up there performing, you very kindly said, oh, okay, write a piece on what it's like. And there is that huge difference is that piece was on the homepage of BBC News.
And got hundreds, you know, it's potentially
hundreds and thousands of hits.
Views.
And if you put the comments on, you get hundreds of comments.
And this is what BBC News has brought us. It's amazing. It's a great platform. Back in the old days of old Ouch, we would have something like 200,000 hits per week, as opposed to, you know, 400,000 per article or more.
Wow.
You know, and that's in a day.
Similar figures to us. Very similar.
So how many people actually listen to the podcast then, the Ouch?
It's very difficult to know, actually. And actually, the system has just broken on the BBC, so we don't know what the latest figures are.
I'm glad you said that, because we have no end of trouble trying to find out through iTunes and stuff.
Yeah, because it sits in so many different places. You know, we do Audio Boom as well.
Yeah, that's what we do.
I think we get quite a few.
At a conservative, very conservative guess, it's over 30,000.
Wow. That's a few less than us, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, you must be very disappointed.
Yeah, yeah.
But keep trying.
Well done.
All we're saying is keep trying, Damon. Emma. You'll get there in the end.
Thank you, Emma and Damon. That's very lovely. Thank you for coming. And so next up, we'll talk to... we're going to talk to next Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet.
He'll be pleased with that introduction, right. I think. Robin, what's new in the world of tech and accessibility?
Well, good evening, everyone, or morning or afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this. I think one thing that's a really hot story recently that's come out in the last week or so is that the BBC are finally, hopefully after lots of popular demand, certainly I've emailed them about this in the past, made their back episodes, many of them over 7,000 hours worth, available for purchase. And there's a BBC store. It's at store.bbc.com. And it's only web-based at the moment, so you have to go to a browser to purchase and also to view. But being the BBC, obviously, it's a very accessible experience. So it's got titles like Doctor Who, Dad's Army, Fawlty Towers, Morecambe and Wise, Blackadder, things like that. So I'm really, really... And also, the prices are a fraction of what they are on, for example, iTunes. So I think it's like $1.89 for an episode... $7.99 for a series, that sort of thing. So I would thoroughly recommend people go to store.bbc.com.
So, but didn't they have? Wasn't there a store before? I didn't realise there wasn't one before.
Not for digital downloads. Okay. I'm not sure what the store sold before because I've never really visited it. But you know, there was a press release went out recently saying that things are now available for digital download. The only slight hiccup at the moment is that titles have captions, you know, subtitles, and some have BSL signers in the corner, but as yet audio description isn't available as an option on any of the titles, so
we'll have to
watch that space.
We'll get Emma and Damon to sort that out, I think, when they go back to the BBC.
Yeah, we'll fix that
tomorrow.
Yeah,
we'll be all right.
Okay, good.
Just a quick follow-up. I love the idea. There's obviously my first bit of saying, well, hang on, we are BBC licensed players. Why am I buying the programme that I've already paid for once? Or also, can people buy it internationally as well?
That's a very good question. And the .com bit, I haven't got the answer for that. I don't know if the other guys have. But BBC.com is obviously their global domain. BBCnews.com is incredibly popular across the world. So that's a really good question, and I don't know the answer.
We're getting shakes of the head. Okay, we'll have to find that out.
And so have you got another one there?
Yeah, so briefly, a week or so ago, there were the RIDI Awards, which stands for Recruitment Industry Diversity and Inclusion Awards.
I was there, Robin.
You were, indeed.
I opened the event forgetting the name. It's Recruitment Industry Disability Initiatives.
Oh, okay then. We were eagerly awaiting to see whether AbilityNet, for example, managed to scoop an award, and we ended up coming away with three, which was absolutely fantastic. Simon was indeed the compere, and we had brilliant live performance from one of the abnormally funny people,
Lawrence.
And absolutely, it was a brilliant night had by all. I wanted to mention Clear Talents, and getting a job when you've got a disability is still very much a challenge, even with this fantastic technology that it's around that really does level the playing field. There was a really interesting bit of desk research that a company called Equal Approach did a while ago. They applied for 20 vacancies with a CV and covering letter, and then they applied for the same 20 vacancies, but with the same CV and covering letter, and they changed the name in each case, and they ticked the box which said they have a disability, which is obviously, you know, if they tick that, then there's a legal requirement that recruiters make reasonable adjustments. In the first instance, they got 20 responses. In the second, they got zero.
Wow.
So this is, this is a huge challenge. And Clear Talents, which went away with three awards, is basically an online tool that sort of squares this circle or bridges this gap. Anyone can go there. If you're applying for a job, you can go to cleartalents.com, create a profile, which basically you tick things that apply to you, and depending on what you tick at a higher level, it drills down really very in depth. And it's not just about disability or impairment, it's about the full right across the nine characteristics, so race, religion, gender, stature, caring responsibilities, ethnicity, all that sort of thing. And what the recruiter gets is a report that gives them the answers. It doesn't just say it. So it's as far from a tick box, mm-hmm. That is a very worrying thing for a recruiter to see, because they go into panic mode. And then there's a one for people who are already in work. If you go to cleartalentsondemand.com, then that's a free one for employees to use to tell their managers or HR of issues that they're having at work. So I would thoroughly recommend that people go and check out those two online tools.
Thank you, Robin. I do know, I always feel like every 10 years they do one of those sort of applications where there's one set like this and one set like that. And it scares me that every 10 years they come back with those sort of low results or response results. Once you declare you've got a disability, or I think that, you know, you use an ethnic sounding name or something. It's just a bit scary that it's still happening. But that sounds good stuff. Interesting. Thank you so much, Robin.
Thanks, guys.
We will speak to you soon.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Robin. Bye. Thanks.
Bye.
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 So we have Shannon on the line. So, Shannon, how are you? How's life in Los Angeles?
It's good, thank you. It's nice to be back. Thankfully, the weather has taken a little dip for the chilly, which is a welcome relief because it was ridiculously boiling throughout summer in September. So it's nice to wear long sleeves.
So summer in September. We it's gone nasty here from August, so interesting. Yes. What else? Anything else happening?
Let me see what else. My leg is now bent down to 90 degrees, so I'm allowed to be independent and nipping around on my own, which is very nice. No longer needing people to help me everywhere I go with my leg. I got in and out of a taxi on my own last week, so that was a big deal for me.
I think I liked that on Facebook. It's very exciting.
I think it did. Yes. So I feel like I'm slowly getting my independence back, which is a massive relief. 4 months of being laid up with a broken leg in a city where you know a handful of people is pretty rough.
So how's the disability bit, or is, how's it like, life being a disabled person in LA?
Well, it's been funny recently, because I think I mentioned on the last podcast with Liz, when she was saying, you know, do people just think you're temporarily disabled? And since I've come back and my leg is now bent to 90 degrees, but I still have a very substantial leg brace encasing my leg, I just have so many people coming up into me in the street and just going, whoa, ACL? Is that your ACL? Oh, my God, is that your ACL? Did you do your ACL? Obviously, it's been a quick learning curve in what ACL is.
Cruciate ligament.
Ligaments, yes.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't have guessed that. I wouldn't know at all.
ACL. What is it?
Yeah. It's the anterior cruciate ligament, which is around the knee area. And when you bust it, tear it, do anything to it, it's incredibly painful and it's a very long period of recovery. It happens to footballers quite a lot.
That's how I knew it.
Yeah. And also, I think out here it happens to, like, skateboarders and surfers and snowboarders and skiers. Obviously, this being California, there's quite a lot of sports and everybody's quite up on their athleticism, shall we say.
So they still think you're temporarily disabled, is
yeah,
that the thing?
I'm getting that a lot. I had it again in the supermarket 2 days ago. A woman just came up to me and she was like, oh, wow, ACL. And I was like, no, fractured tib and fib.
No, but shouldn't you be saying, yeah, surfboard crash, wipe out? Why don't you kind
shark
of
attack.
Buy into it?
Because then if they then continued the conversation with, like, surfboard slang, I wouldn't have a clue what I was talking about. And I'd sound like some loser who just watched Point Break a lot. You know,
I just say laters and you're sitting there. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, it's like, whoa, harsh. But so that's been weird.
Well, we wish you well. We do hope that sort of the works that keeps or does start coming through, and we will speak to you very soon.
I look forward to it. Enjoy your day.
Thanks, Shannon.
Thanks, Shannon.
Thanks, bye.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please leave us a review or a rating on Audioboom and iTunes.
We are coming to the end of the show, but first of all, a big thank you to Emma Tracy and to Damon Rose. We will put up links to all their stuff and the things that you can find out about them.
So, what's up next with you, Emma? Anything happening?
Me? I'm child-proofing my house because child's about to start crawling and walking. I've already got him a baby jail / playpen, which he actually likes, which is good. See, this is boring.
We did all that with our kids. Do you put the those kind of rubber corners everywhere
yes,
as well?
Yeah,
so we did that and they just fell off and we just tended not to use them afterwards.
And where are you gigging, Emma?
So, yeah, doing that, putting bells, getting him socks with bells on so I know where he is.
Oh.
Figuring out how to change his nappy when he rolls across the room. That kind of thing. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, goodness, sound a bit. That just sounds adorable to have your child walking around with little bells. I think I'm thinking of Christmas and I'm getting it all inappropriate, aren't I?
I think if you're constantly hearing the bells, it might get a bit annoying, though, wouldn't it, in the end? Or
yeah, but it's better than not knowing where he
is. Of course.
Well, you get a little chip implanted, something like that, with a nap.
Yeah, I think I'll go with bells.
Thought you might. Damon, what are you up to?
Well, it seems I've got to find a new podcast to listen to.
That's very nice. Yeah,
yeah. I'm going to have to go.
You never know, Damon. We might get there.
Okay. All right. Well, that would be nice to know. Other than that, we're looking at. I live in Suffolk, so I commute to London every day, which is daft. So we're looking at moving back to London at the moment.
Oh, wow.
Ridiculous move. I don't think it'll happen.
That's very unusual for people to move back into London.
I know.
Whereabouts in Suffolk are you?
Just outside Ipswich.
Oh, that's quite a way.
But you're going to give up your 4-bed to have the
five
half a room.
Yeah.
five bed. Yeah.
Listen to me. Five. Well, but you'll get a studio.
Helipad.
Yeah, little studio in London. No,
studio flat.
But whereabouts in London? You're going to like north south London.
Oh, we're looking everywhere. We look from West Harrow to Orpington, and now there's Christina's found a place in Sutton. She's looking at the moment.
Sutton, that's our old crowd, isn't it? Yeah, Sutton Market. Yeah. Stay Press trousers.
Great
thing. Did you used to wear Stay Fresh?
Of course I did.
Was that in the 80s?
Maroon. Yeah. My maroon.
Yeah. And did you used to wear a pea green flight jacket as well?
Oh, I combat. Do remember them. Couldn't get them in my size.
My brother used a combat jacket. No, that's something else. There we go. That's great.
Harrington.
I remember the Harringtons. They were great.
Is there something
I'm way
to
too young to
and
know anything. Way too young and blind to know anything.
My wife won't let me get a Harrington. I want to get one off eBay at the moment. She won't let me. In a retro sort of way.
Do you remember after Stay Press, waffles came in?
Yeah.
I never really got on with them.
No, Stay
never
Press
felt right.
Waffles. No.
Never.
No. Well, there we go. Thank you both. It's been great. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks to all of you who stay in touch. We do love hearing from you, whether it's social media or the good old email.
You can find out how to contact us via our website, abnormallyfunnypeople.com.
And you'll find the transcript of the show as well as photos and other bits and bobs.
Now, as it stands, we've not managed to secure sponsorship to continue the podcast.
Get out of here. You sure?
I know. Well, we got interested people, but it might not happen.
Well, in the meantime, we might go a little quiet, but we hope to return.
Indeed we do. So for now, it's not goodbye, it's au revoir.
It's au revoir, which is goodbye, Simon. Au bientôt.
This is going to be the last minute of our ever podcast. And
we're going to come back. We're going to return.
We. Yes. Okay, so it's not goodbye?
It's not. We'll see you soon.
Hopefully.
And of course, thanks to our producer, Joe. Bye.